ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. Canto 6, Prescribed Duties for Mankind, also called Poshana, the Lord's Protection. Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamil. Today's text 55, we're continuing the Yamadutas pleading their case. Esha prakriti sangena Esha prakriti sangena Purushasya viparyayah Purushasya viparyayah Asitsa eva nachirad Asitsa eva nachirat Isha sangad baliyate Isha sangad baliyate Esha prakriti sangena Purushasya viparyayah Asitsa eva nachirat Isha sangad baliyate Bolo
Isha prakriti sangena Purushasya viparyayah Asitsa
Thank you.
Word for word, translation, Eshaha.
This.
Prakriti Sangena.
Because of association with the material nature.
Purushasya.
Of the living entity.
Viparyayaha.
A situation of forgetfulness.
Or an awkward position.
Asit.
Came to be.
Saha.
That position.
Eva.
Indeed.
Na.
Not.
Chirat.
Taking a long time.
Isha Sangat.
From the association of the Supreme Lord.
Valiyate
is vanquished. So the Yamadutas are continuing to plead their case. Since the living entity is associated with material nature, he is in an awkward position. But if in the human form of life, he is taught how to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, this position can be overcome. Please repeat, since the living entity is associated with material nature, he is in an awkward position. But if in the human form of life, he is taught how to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, this position can be overcome. Srila Prabhupada's purport, the word prakriti means material nature, and purusha may also refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one wants to continue his association with prakriti, the female energy of Krishna, and be separated from Krishna by the illusion that he is able to enjoy prakriti, he must continue in his conditional life. If he changes his consciousness, however, and associates with the Supreme, original person, Purusham Shashvatam, or with his associates, he can get out of the entanglement of material nature. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, and this is the line that Prabhupada would quote the most. If you look in the Bhaktivedanta database and you type in Janma Karma Chame Divyam, you will get so many hits. This is the line that Prabhupada quoted the most. Or the whole verse, actually. He didn't lecture on it the most, but he quoted it the most. The verse he lectured on the most was Maya Saktamanag Parta 7.1. Now hear, O son of Prita, by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, samagram, and free from doubt. That was the verse. You find about 20, 21 lectures in the Vedabase. But this Janma Karma verse, Prabhupada would cite more often than any other verse. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evang Yo Veti Tatvataha, one must simply understand the Supreme Person, Krishna, in terms of his form, name, activities, and pastimes. This will keep one always in the association of Krishna. And then he quotes another line from the verse. Chaktva dehang punar janmanaiti mameti sorjana. Usually you hear Prabhupada say it, he says konteya. Isn't one devotee quipped, Prabhupada, he's chanting Bhagavad Gita from another universe. So sometimes the words differ, but the purport's the same. Krishna is the greatest. Thus, after giving up his gross material body,
one accepts not another gross body, but a spiritual body, in which to return home, back to Godhead. Thus one ends the tribulation caused by his association with the material energy. In summary, the living entity is an eternal servant of God, but he comes to the material world and is bound by material conditions because of his desire to lord it over matter. That's a classic paradox. I'll read the sentence again. The living entity is an eternal servant of God, but he comes to the material world and is bound up by material conditions. Why are we bound up? Because we want to be free. We're bound up because of his desire to lord it over matter. I want to be free to lord it over matter. Therefore, I'm bound up. That's us in one nuts shell. In a nutshell. It doesn't make any sense, right? It's like in New Vrindavan years ago. It was the day of my Brahman initiation during a blinding snowstorm. It was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance anniversary. And it was, it was so bad. It was the original New Vrindavan farm, only one property in those days, just 90 acres. And it was really a heavy snowstorm. We were really snowed in. So we had the ceremony. And then, then we had a lecture and Hayagriva Prabhu gave the lecture, the late. And then we had a feast. But during the whole thing, one guest who was visiting New Vrindavan, he took the opportunity of the event to leave. He thought he had to go because, you know, I gotta go. I gotta get out of here. You can't even smoke around here. He wanted to be free to smoke, but what he had to do was he had to brave a 2-mile hike, you know, just down the dirt road to get to the main road, and then he had to hitchhike to what was called Ma Eddie's General Store, you know, to get a pack of ciggies. And that was his idea of freedom. But that's the story of our life in the material world. The living entity is an eternal servant of God, but he comes to the material world and is bound by material conditions because of his desire to lord it over matter. Doesn't make any sense. Liberation means giving up this. Now, there's another paradox. Liberation means giving up this false consciousness and reviving one's original service to the Lord. So freedom is surrender. See, it doesn't make any sense to the material mind. Freedom is surrender. This return to one's original life is called mukti, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena evastiti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnanam Janashalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master is kindly opening my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So, just to review a little bit the conflict that's going on here. As we know, Ajamil was a fine and dutiful Brahmin, but then he got corrupted and he spent his whole life leading a life of sin. And now here it is at the end of his life, and his case is being debated. It's being decided. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, if someone's in a coma, that means his case is taking a long time to be decided. Karmana daiva netrena janto dehopupati, I would say. Our next life is not our, in one sense we do choose it because of our desires and our activities, but man proposes, but then God disposes. So sometimes if our case is especially complex and there's many factors, sometimes it takes longer for the devas to decide exactly where to place this person. So the Yamadutas, as we know, showed up to take him. And then the Vishnudutas showed up. And basically, it was like, you know, the Yamadutas are saying, in effect, what do you think you're doing? And the Vishnudutas are saying, what do you think you're doing? You know? So, who's right? But now the Yamadutas are pleading their case, and you see that the Yamadutas, even though they look ghoulish and horrible and, you know, distorted and horrific, they're not dummies. They started to plead their case back in text 40 by saying Veda pranasahinihito dharmo, that you know, religious principles are in the Vedas and Narayans, and they're directly coming from God, the Supreme. And furthermore, Svayambhur, Anushushuma, and we've heard this. We've heard this from authority. And we know their boss. We know their boss is Yamaraj, and he's a Mahajan. So they're not just making things up. They're not just winging it. They're following the rule of law. And isn't it interesting that this very word that they use, Anushushuma, is the same word Arjuna used when he was pleading his case in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I just want to refresh our memories of a few verses where Arjuna was also pleading his case on the basis of Dharma. So here we go. It's text 39 through 43. You hear the word Dharma a lot. I'll just read the English. With the destruction of the dynasty, the eternal family tradition, Kula Dharma, family Dharma, is vanquished. And thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion, the next verse famously begins, adharma, irreligion, adharma, bhavat, Krishna. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. These are not, he didn't just make this up. He's heard this, and he's going to say this at the end of the series. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. Again, Kula Dharma. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. We can scarcely imagine a society where, from even before you're born to after you leave and all the way through your life, there's rites of passage where you're being protected, you're being wished well by your friends and family and everybody, so that you can have a better destination. Next text. Again, and this is Jati Dharma. This is community dharma, community projects, like digging wells, planting trees. By the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Just like I see some devotees in the room who are involved in the Mayapur town planning, so we want to make sure it's being planned according to Prabhupada's desires and directives, and that's a big discussion. So a lot of that is providing enough green space, enough educational space, along with residential space and guest house space and worship space. All these spaces have a place. So Arjuna is arguing here, community, very important, but not the most important. 43. Here's the last verse in the series. He uses the same word as the Yamadutas, Anushushuma. Vutsandukula dharmanam manushanam janardana narake niyatang vaso bhavati anushushuma. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by the cyclic succession that those who destroy family traditions are destroyed, those whose family traditions are destroyed. Yeah, that's
I read it like the first edition, which was wrong. That those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. So, he's pleading his case. Such an exalted conversation. The person in illusion is telling God, God, thou shalt not kill. In the Bible, you know, we know. Thou shalt not kill was one of the commandments, but the Gita is such an exalted conversation that the person in illusion is saying to God, God, thou shalt not kill. So the point is that both Arjuna and the Yamaduta's arguments are authoritative. They're not made up. They're coming from Shastra. But Kintu, as we'll hear later, they're not arguing from the highest platform. And Yamaraj, once he's approached by his employees, by his assistants, the Yamadutas, will have to enlighten them. And Yamaraj will ecstatically enlighten them because he hardly gets a chance to preach. He's so busy just adjudicating people's lives, you know, punishing especially the sinful, of course, that he doesn't get a chance to preach. So when his own men come to him, what's going on? We hear a whole, you know, Yamaraj Samhita. Yamaraj is ecstatically singing the praises of the Supreme Lord. Whoop, confirmed or refuted, I'm not sure. Somebody pulled the plug. Okay, I'd like to speak something about how it's no small thing to know what Dharma is, because there are different levels of Dharma. And at the end of the Gita, what did Krishna say? Sarva Dharman Parityaja. Yeah, you're speaking, this is all very nice. But finally, Arjuna, you fight because I'm asking you to fight, and I'm the supreme authority. So when our founder Acharya, when he was in his preaching Leela, he was coming to establish Bhagavad Dharma, what the highest duty of the human being was. And he was there to expose and dismiss anything less, any kind of materialistic religion. In 1972 was the year of Srila Prabhupada's famous Bhagavad Dharma discourses, which he gave in New Vrindavan. And he did that over a period of 10 days before and after Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja. But let me set the stage for this. That was in September, August, September 72. So back in March of that year, Srila Prabhupada was right here in Sridhar Mayapur. And what was he doing in March 72 in Sridhar Mayapur? He was breaking ground for this project. The late Tamal Krishna Maharaj had purchased the first parcel in late 71. And then in 1972, Srila Prabhupada invited his god brothers and invited as many devotees as could muster the funds or the time or the energy to come and help him celebrate the groundbreaking of this project that we are engaged in. So devotees came, and a lot of his godbrothers came. But as we've mentioned in previous classes, on the one hand, they appreciated that Swami Maharaj was doing what Guru Maharaj had asked them all to do. He was actually preaching all over the world, especially in the English-speaking countries. And here were the fruits of that preaching. Here were the Videshi Vaishnavas, you know, the foreign devotees. Here were the Malechas, Yavanas, turned aspiring devotees, Praya Vaishnavas. And they appreciated that, but they had issues with Prabhupada. And the biggest issue they had was that Prabhupada was allowing men and women to serve together in the same place, in the same center. And they say, why are you doing this? You know this is wrong. And they brought out some dharma to prove it. They brought out the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the Bhagavatam, which is preaching Bhagavad Dharma. They stood pat on a verse. I don't know the Sanskrit, but the verse is that a man is like butter in a pot and a lady's like fire, and you put the butter in the pot too close to the fire and the butter's going to melt. Why are you doing this? You're inviting scandal. Why are you doing this? So, Srila Prabhupada tried to explain to them that when he went to the West, what he found was not India. Quite to the contrary. He found that the first place he went to was America, of course, and he found that from the time boys and girls are toddlers, practically, they're freely mixing. And then they're in the same class, and they're educated the same way. You can't change a culture, Prabhupada tried to explain to them, overnight. Outside of these centers I'm establishing in the West, Prabhupada said, there is no supportive spiritual culture. These are oases in a desert of materialism. So what was he to do? Deny half the human race access to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? No. He tried to explain to them that he was following... Okay. I think somebody's keeping me honest anyway. Watch what you say, pal. Okay. So Prabhupada, he was operating on a higher... They were standing on a principle, a dharmic principle. You don't keep men and women freely mixing. It's a formula for Varna Sankara, right? In Kali Yuga, most people are born out of a bottle of beer on Saturday night, etc., etc. That's why we have such a hard time in this world. Okay, so Prabhupada was standing on a higher... What was that principle? Principle was, yena tena prakarena mana krishna niveshayet nishevayet sarve vininishedha syore tayore vakinkaraha. This is Srila Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the very Mahajan Mahatma that he'd been praying to at Radha Damodar. Please empower me. I don't know how I'm going to do this. So the highest principle is, somehow or other, fix their minds on Krishna. The mind should be fixed on Krishna. Somehow or other, yena tena, somehow or do it. Sarve vidhi. All the rules and regulations of Shastra are maidservants. Should be made servants of this principle. So Prabhupada tried to explain that. It was met with mixed reactions. Okay, that was March. Then in June 72, we have the birth of the what came to be known in America as... I didn't sleep last night, I can't think of the name. And everybody knows what it is. The Rainbow Festival. Okay. In Strawberry Lake, Colorado. You can ask your husband where Strawberry Lake is. The first gathering of people who wanted to start really getting serious about making an alternative civilization. You know, they've been through Woodstock, they've been through the protest. Okay, you know, Nixon won the last election, it's hopeless. We got to start making our own world here. So they go to Strawberry Lake, Colorado, and they start brainstorming, you know, the what's now called, you know, in history, Woodstock Nation. Where are we going to be? Some devotees went to that first thing. And they met these people, and they were sharing with these people Krishna culture. Why don't you come and meet our guru? He's the real answer here. He's the missing link to your ruminations of how we're going to make an alternative society here. come to the hills of West Virginia. It's beautiful, just like here in Strawberry Lake, Colorado. Meet our guru, Srila Prabhupada. And some of them did. Some of them came. In August, September, they came. And so along with the people from the counterculture, from Strawberry Lake, came a lot of people that the devotees had invited. Journalists and politicians and scholars. To meet the person responsible for this Hare Krishna explosion. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Come and meet him. Come and see for yourself. And they came. A lot of them came. The evening news came. The New York Times came. Mother Earth News, which was authentically representing the back to the land people in those days. Since then, it's gone the way of all flesh and become a slick, upscale, yuppie journal. And Prabhupada, he preached Bhagavad Dharma. He was preaching. I was one of the discourses. And here's how one of the discourses ended. The reporter from the Mother Earth News, after Prabhupada gave his speech, Prabhupada invited questions. And the reporter said, it was a long-haired guy, you know, and he said, if the purpose of life is to know Krishna, why is Maya so strong? Because he knew something, you know, about Maya. So without missing a beat, Prabhupada said, your purpose is not strong. Prabhupada would do that all the time. He would take people's own words, turn it back on them to make a higher point. And Prabhupada said that with such finality and such depth and such strength that ended the discourse. We all just bowed down. Your purpose is not strong. We were right in front of him, so we went. We caught the full brunt of Prabhupada's voice. So we became like wheat in the wind, you know. We knew he was speaking to all of us, not just the Mother Earth News guy. Okay, so that September, Prabhupada, whole Bhagavad Dharma, beautiful. You can hear the tapes, you can read the transcripts. You know, Prabhupada's laying down what's the highest duty of the human being. It's interesting that a Bhagavad Gita, only twice does Krishna repeat himself. There's only two pair of verses where Krishna repeats himself. One's about thinking of him, manmanabhavabhadbhakto, madhyajimavnamaskaru. Then he ends it differently in 934 and 1865, he ends it differently. But there's another pair of verses, so that's about thinking of Krishna. There's another pair of verses where Krishna, he does the same thing. You know those verses? Yes. Very good. Shreyam svadharma viguna paradharma svanushtita. It's better to do your own duty than another's duty. Better. So just in terms of mathematics, Krishna is placing, in terms of emphasis, Krishna is placing duty on an equal level with ante narayana smriti, the goal of life, to think of Krishna, especially at the time of death. Why? Because duty is the way we practically express our devotion to Krishna. And in the first chapter of the Gita, Krishna wasn't expressing that. Nayuksya, I shall not fight. So Prabhupada, in August, September of 72, he was establishing Bhagavad Dharma. He was establishing why he had come. To kick out all compromised spirituality. No compromise with desires to enjoy the gross body or the subtle mind. This is something that, you know, especially the Abrahamic religions need to hear. This is why Buddhism is so prominent. Because, you know, the Abrahamic religions have produced, you know, in Kali Yuga, perennial paradigms of hatred and war. Based on the bodily concept of life. The quintessential paradigm of that is Jerusalem. You know, they all fight. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam each make their claims to property in Jerusalem as the holy, their holy land. Right? Anyway, so now we're going to fast forward one more month to October. when we come to the point of why Dharma is not so easily discerned, even amongst people like us who were ostensibly following Bhagavad Dharma. And it's October, Prabhupada's in Manila, the Philippines, and Shrutakirti is setting up his things, and then the next day Shrutakirti is massaging him, and out of the blue, Prabhupada alludes to what happened way back in March in Mayapur. My God brothers criticized me. This is just out of the blue, apropos of nothing in particular. It's still on Prabhupada's mind. My God brothers criticized me that I have allowed women to live in our centers. This is not done in India. This is not done in India. You better believe that our founder Acharya, at one and the same time, understand this, at one and the same time, he's encouraging us to learn to take the best from remnants of Krishna culture in India, but at one and the same time, he's not limited to the way things have always been done in India for 5,000 years. We have to understand this in order to effectively preach all over the world. Okay, so he's saying, this is not done in India. You don't have men and women, especially in India, you know, serving together in the same centers. And Prabhupada knew it was a risk. He knew that scandalous things would happen. Scandalous things are happening. Scandalous things will happen. But he's not going to deny anybody access to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Karamore Toma Bina Ke Dayalo Jagat Samsara. This is Lord Chaitanya's program. Okay? This is not done in India. So as I've told before, Shrutakirti, as he reports in What is the Difficulty, says, well, when Prabhupada said that... Oh no, but then Prabhupada said one more thing. He said, but because I made this adjustment, because I subordinated that lower principle to the higher principle, of access, of compassion. Because I made this adjustment, I have become successful. So then, Shrutakirti said, then I started thinking, okay, I've got to ask a question now, and I got to get the words right. And finally he asked, Srila Prabhupada, how do you know when you're changing a principle or just adjusting details? How do you know the difference between changing a principle and adjusting details? That's the question, right? That's the question that divides us so often all over the ISKCON world. This isn't Prabhupada. You're not doing Prabhupada. Hey, Prabhupada is a many splendored founder of Acharya. To know what is and is not Prabhupada is no small thing. We'd better study him in every context to know why he does what he does. Or else we'll throw up our hands. Prabhupada's contradicting himself. Never contradicts himself. Never, ever, ever. Even when his applications are diametrically opposed, he's never contradicting himself. So, how do you... Shrutakirti asked the question. How do you know the difference between changing a principle and adjusting, you know? How do you know when you're messing up? Silence. Shrutakirti is doing the massage from the back. Prabhupada didn't say anything for the longest time. Just, you know, and the suspense is building, right? And finally Prabhupada said, that takes little intelligence. That takes a little intelligence. The understatement of the yuga. I mean, Prabhupada's own God brothers who were light years, whose adhikara is light years ahead of my samskaras, they have samskaras, I have some scars. Right? Okay. That takes a little intelligence. Burijan Prabhu, who was in the room, wrote about this in My Glorious Master. He said, Shrutakirti's question is very intelligent. To mistake a principle for a detail will cause havoc in spiritual life. If you take something that's timeless, that you don't mess with, and you think that's just a detail, and you compromise it, that'll cause havoc in your spiritual life. And to take every detail, to treat every detail as though it's a principle, is fanaticism, and you can't do anything. You're forever bound, you know, but to one application. You think, you try to make one application everything, you know. So, it's no small thing to know the difference between a higher principle and a lower principle. So what I'm going to do, because it's 9:15, is invite you to explore this more tomorrow when we have our Sadhu Sangha, and the topic is going to be make-believe Prabhupadas. And if you don't understand what that means, it's, I did that on purpose so you'd come and find out. Make-believe, fictional, imaginary, concocted, sentimental and impersonal make-believe Prabhupadas. We're going to identify them and kick them out. Okay, so I'm going to read the verse again. If you have any questions or comments, please raise your hand. The Yamadutas are pleading their case. And now they're showing their stuff. They're showing that they know Shastra here. This is good stuff. Since the living entity is associated with material nature, he is in an awkward position. But if in the human form of life, he is taught how to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Irony there, right? Because Ajamil has, but they don't know the higher power of the name. To associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, this position can be overcome. So the Vishnu Dutas are going to use their words and bring him to a higher platform. Well, Yamaraj is actually. Okay, Gita Nagari Prabhu. No, not Indian culture. Krishna culture. So what's the challenge? There's a challenge there. Krishna culture. We have no use for modern India. Welcome to India. Feel the passion. Come on, I didn't come to India to feel the passion. I got enough passion, you know. Yes, yes. So, if we want to know what kind of culture Prabhupada's talking about, we have to study his books deeply, and right in his books, we find out how he applied that culture all over the world. And I've brought this up time and time again. You go to C.C. Vajjalila, chapter 23, text 105. And there, Prabhupada is talking about the difference between practical renunciation and dry renunciation. That's the verse. Lord Chaitanya is preaching Sanatana Goswami about the difference between Shushka Vairagya, dry renunciation, and Yukta Vairagya, engaging, practical renunciation. That's one verse in Purport you got to check out to know how to apply that Krishna culture all over the world. Another verse, Bhagavatam, this is Dhruva Leela, 4:854. It's a perfect echo. It's a perfect companion to that CC verse, where Prabhupada is also taking the opportunity to explain how the way you introduce and develop Krishna consciousness is very different all over the world. So the challenge is to understand what is timeless, what you don't mess with, and what is adjustable. Or even if you have a Shastric principle, You have to know the order of those principles. His godbrothers, Prabhupada's godbrothers, were standing on a Bhagavat principle, a principle that Narada Muni was preaching to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Prabhupada knew that verse, he would quote it. But he was operating on a higher principle. And he was operating also on the principle, as he told Harishari Prabhu and Satsrup Maharaj right in the Lotus Building on February 14th, 1977, when he was saying, you folks need to do Varnashram, not just for their sake, for your sake. He was saying, Prabhupada saying, Lord Chaitanya, yeah, he rejected Varnashram, our program is different. And you hear Prabhupada say that and you think, huh? What do you mean? He's the Senapati Bhakta that Prabhupada that was sent all over the world, the military field commander, to create faith in the faithless, to turn the atheists into theists, you know, and to the malechas into aspiring Vaishnavas. How can Prabhupada say our program is different than Lord Chaitanya? What Prabhupada means is, as you continue to read the conversation, he wants to extend the mercy of Mahaprabhu downward so people can get aboard the bhakti marg according to their natural guna and karma, so they can start to progress. So what we really need to understand better is that when you extend the mercy, so to speak, at the bottom, you're not compromising the top. Provided, here's the big crucial proviso, provided you give people a path, a way to keep moving across the bridge. You don't camp out on the bridge. You don't make the bridge your all in all. You don't build a home on the bridge. You just keep moving. Move. On the Varnashram bridge. This is what the cows are trying to tell us, right? Cows ruminate. They chew their cud. Okay, so it's a big topic. It's a big question. But that, in a nutshell, is what it is. We have to know how to. We have to study Srila Prabhupada deeply enough and broadly enough so that we can tell what's a principle, what's a detail, what's a higher principle, what's a lower principle, and in the sangha, in the well-rounded sangha of serious and sincere devotees, then we can celebrate our diverse applications instead of fighting over them. Krishna North, Krishna South, Krishna East, Krishna West, there's a way to do it. There's a way to know what's timeless and what's relative. But that's not easily discerned. That takes a lot of surrender, and it takes good association, and it's practically a life's work. That's why, even though Prabhupada said that in 1977, what are we doing today? We're still, you know, wrestling with these very same issues. But it's a good fight. It's good. Okay, Gita, let me give somebody else a chance. Unless, no, okay. That's not what I said. If you pander to the lowest common denominator, did I say we're going to pander to the lowest common denominator? No. When you extend the mercy at the bottom, as Prabhupada did, pave the way. Prabhupada said, well, now we have to pave the way. We have to make it easy. That's what he said. Read the conversation. Do your homework. We're not pandering to the lowest common denominator. That's wrong. That's when you contravene the principles. Whatever applications we make, they should serve the principles. They shouldn't contradict the principles. That's probably the answer to your question. Whatever adjustment we make, it should serve the timeless. The relative should serve the timeless. It shouldn't, you know, bury us deeper and deeper in tamaguna. Yeah. But again, how to discern that? Well,
Sometimes you don't know until you try it. Just like if people have been reading this Swamiji book, it's been circulating around, Brahmananda Prabhu's memoirs. So Brahmananda reports that a couple of years after 26th Second Avenue, they were at 61 Second Avenue, and Brahmananda was the first TP of any... first TP. So he said to Swamiji, "Swamiji, a couple of years ago, you remember how, you know, you asked us, first you asked us to chant 64 rounds. And then you asked us to chant 32 rounds. And then finally, when we couldn't even do that, you asked us to chant 16 rounds. Why did you do that?" And so you know what Swamiji said? Prabhupada said, "I was experimenting." That's what Prabhupada was doing with Varnashram, too. First he said, "Forget it." Then he said, "Do it for their sake." Then he finally said, "Do it for your sake." So the ultimate test of whether our applications are, you know, progressive or regressive, Krishna, you know, Krishna or Maya, sometimes you don't know until you try it. Prabhupada would, you know, judge a thing by its result. Yeah. Palena, parachiyate. You do the best you can and you consult. It's like Prabhupada consulted. He said to his sannyas, the person who would become his sannyas guru, "Keshav Maharaj, should I stay in Jhansi or should I leave? People are telling me I should fight this." You know? So he consulted. The godbrother said, "You know, Guru Maharaj always liked us to be in big population centers. This Jhansi, it's kind of a backwater, you know, it's not worth a fight. It's out of the way. You didn't come to Jhansi, you know, you're not in Vanaprastha in Jhansi to engage in litigation." 20 years later, fast forward 20 years later, Prabhupada's in Bombay. He's the only one who didn't give up on Bombay. When everybody else gave up, when everybody else, you know, caved under the pressure of Mr. Nair, only Prabhupada persevered. Because he knew. He knew that that was going to be big. He was in Mumbai, after all. And he could see an area that had a future and look what happened. So we have to consult, and not just anybody. Serious, sincere Vaishnavas, strictly following, well-rounded. Okay, any more? One more? No? Okay, if you want to know more about make-believe Prabhupadas, please come tomorrow. We're going to start at 2:30 kirtan, and then at 3:15 we'll start to explore sentimental and impersonal make-believe Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.